Ahoy! You're listening to Diffuse Tap with Kenny Estes and Isla Prem. Today we're joined by Jiho Kang, partner at Antler. He's going to be talking about how to tell whether a founder is bound to fail or succeed, why some founders quit and some stick it out, and what lessons can be learned from failed founder partnerships. Enjoy. Welcome, one and all. Thank you back. That was in English, but you know what I'm saying. Welcome. So if you're a little confused as to what is going on, I'm going to briefly talk about what we're up to. So this is a weekly event. Oh, friendly reminder, in the big room, which is where you are now, please do stay on mute. Otherwise it gets unwieldy. This is a weekly event. We do it every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central. We've done it 206 weeks in a row, nonstop. We're machines, Isla. Well, you're a machine. I just show up. We're going to briefly talk about Diffuse Tap, the event you're in right now, as well as Diffuse Funds, the company that's putting it on. We're going to do a 15-minute fireside chat with my dear friend, Jiho, and then we're going to do two rounds of tap rooms, kind of similar to what you just did. This event is mostly networking. Of the hour, roughly 40, 45 minutes of it, is you in small groups of four, five, six, something like that, networking with each other. Most of the audience are alternative investors of one flavor or another, pretty heavy skew towards digital assets. So if you like alternative investing, if you like digital assets, you're in the right room and you can meet a lot of like-minded individuals. We do want you to learn a little bit, which is why we have folks like Jiho on to talk about what he is up to. Also, if you like just the networking and you want to do it in person, we do them in person. June 3rd, LA, we are Kate Lynch and Scott Turner are hosting an in-person Diffuse Tap. It's a little like this, except nothing like this, because it is in person, three-dimensional, and there is probably a little bit of alcohol involved in the process, if that's your jam. Today's speaker, about us. Diffuse Funds is a fund platform focused on alternative investments, mostly digital. Right now, our kind of flagship, the one we're spending most of our time on, is Diffuse Digital 30. This is a market cap weighted index fund of the top 30 cryptocurrencies. In short, we're kind of trying to invest like the S&P, but for crypto. It is publicly listed. We are scaling and going for broke. So if you know anybody who wants to join us on that journey, do not be shy in introducing them. Now it's actually enough about us. So Jiho, my good man, over to you. Thank you so much for joining us. It is 12:15 a.m. his time. So that is like serious dedication. But you want to tell the good folks a little bit about your background and what you're up to now over at Antler.
Hi, thanks for having me. I was in the breakout room and I took up the entire time just giving the long version of, of introducing myself. So short version, born in South Korea, grew up in the US when I was much younger, probably until I was 13, moved back to Korea, finished school. And since I was in high school, I believe I wanted to build my own business in tech. I was talking about how Mark Zuckerberg is probably similar age as I am. So I'm thinking to myself, well, I mean, he can do it. How hard can it be? Very hard. So after that, I failed at four different businesses, like startups, before I hit 27, my late 20s. Decided I needed to get a real job because I had accumulated a fair amount of credit card debt. So I decided to work for one of the subsidiaries of SK Telecom, which is South Korea's largest telco, building like new businesses that allowed them to charge more data fees from everyone that's using this on their plans. After that, I moved over to work for Coupang. In the early days before they got their SoftBank investment, for people that don't know, Coupang, founded in 2010, is now South Korea's largest e-commerce company. They went public on NASDAQ a couple of years ago for about $40 billion.
This would be like the Amazon South Korea, is that right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. After Coupang, I decided I was probably in my early 30s by then. Like, okay, I probably want to start another business before maybe I get married or actually decide to settle down. So that's what I did. Started a new company called Sungo, which is a professional services marketplace. You can hire a plumber. You can hire someone to fix your roof. You can hire a mover. You can hire a cleaner, whatever. So that went pretty well. We were a YC, Y Combinator portfolio company. That company was a YC portfolio company. Went through Series A, B, and C. It's now worth a little under $250 million. But I exited early to get into Web3 and crypto around 2018. That was, we were building a stablecoin based on fiat South Korean won. We went to Binance for investment, but they say, hey, we want to enter the South Korean market. So we ended up selling that company, and then we rebranded our stable token to Binance KRW, Binance Korean won. Had to exit from Binance because Binance was also under heavy scrutiny under, like, from the South Korean regulators. Didn't work out. Now I'm at Antler since 2021. Antler is a VC, but we invest a little differently. So we don't go out looking for good deals to invest in. We invest in tech startups, but we build our deals in-house. And what that means is, if you think about any wildly successful company, it's normally started by one person or a group of people that decide that they want to quit their jobs and start a business. So for instance, Jeff Bezos, he used to work in investment banking. In 94, he quit, moved to Seattle and say, hey, I'm going to build like a virtual bookstore and in the lab. So what we want to do is invite the next generation of unicorn founders right at the beginning, like right when they decide, hey, I want to quit my job and build a business. So we run these cohorts. In Korea, we run them twice a year, 6 months for each program. And we say, hey, if you want to start a business, you can come build it with us. We will coach you, we'll provide you with the networks, and we'll provide you with a pool of different founders that you can network with. And after 10 weeks, we'll decide whether or not we want to invest into you or not. So during the 10 weeks, you have to work with us to come up with a business that we think is investable. And you also have to bring a team that's actually able to execute on that plan. And that's when we invest. So we invest based on our observations, our 10-week observations of the founders that we have in our program. It's a full-time program. My office is located right next to the open office space where the founders are at. So Antler in Korea, we've been doing this for about 2 years. Globally, we've been doing it since 2018. We've invested into over 1,200 different startups globally at the very like inception stage. And again, we are able to invest at the lowest valuations, independent of any other investor. And our job is to basically make sure that these companies don't die and survive to make it to the next round so they can do their seed rounds, Series A and onward.
I love that. It's kind of like a hybrid accelerator, venture investor type thing, which makes total sense. Also, I love the fact that you're rocking wine right now. It is midnight there, so it's brilliant. But before we get into Antler and kind of that model and the pros and cons of it, I'm going to kind of chuck us into a complete tangent. Do you know anything about the kimchi trade?
Yeah, I can tell you a lot. I was wondering if you wanted to talk about that. So you can chat about that if you want. Yeah.
Yeah.
So well, I did do some kimchi arb trading when I was working at Sungo. And this was just on the side. It's like completely, I didn't know it would be that big of a deal because another YC like founder that was in my network was one day told me that, hey, did you know that the price of like ETH is like 10% more expensive in Korea than it is anywhere in the world? And like, I did not know that. Had no idea why that was happening, but you know, we kind of started small and got kind of big later.
So why was that actually happening? Because I like to explore the inefficiency of crypto because there is certainly no lack of them.
It's a really simple explanation for why that happened. So South Korea, crypto was pumping immensely. So there was a very high during 2017 when I first encountered the spread. There was huge demand for crypto within South Korea. And at the time in 2017, the South Korean crypto exchanges were infinitely more efficient in terms of processing fiat than any other exchange in the world. So Korea has a very well built like domestic financial infrastructure. So even now, I mean, back in the day, even if I wanted to wire money into an exchange, I just get on my phone, tap a couple of buttons, and the money would be on exchange within like 30 seconds. If I went to withdraw that cash, like I would be able to withdraw that cash within 30 seconds as well. So it was really easy. I mean, the friction level for people getting into crypto trading was like very, very low. So there was a huge surge in demand of crypto within South Korea. So what happens if you run out of crypto? Like if there's probably an amount of crypto that each exchange is holding for trading, and then you have other people bringing in their own cryptos. But what if you have, what if you run out of Bitcoin and ETH to sell? Then you get an inflated price because there's not enough supply. If there's not enough supply, what do? You have to go out and get some, which in Korea's case, you have to buy from overseas. Now, how do you buy from overseas? You have to be able to send money. It's very difficult to send money. No, it's actually easy to send money into Korea, but it's really difficult to send money outside of Korea. It's not important. It's not impossible to send money out of Korea. It's just that it requires a lot of paperwork, and you have to jump through a lot of hoops if you want to wire massive amounts of money out of the country. And even if you have a lot of arbitrage traders that are doing that like 24/7, the banks only wire money during their when the FX markets are open, which is between like 10 a.m. and I think 2 p.m. If the banks aren't like, you know, wiring money, then you just have like super inflated prices because there's just too much demand and not enough supply.
Gotcha. Makes sense. And this is a bit of history right now. That arbitrage is largely gone, right?
It's still coming back. I mean, I think I've checked recently. I think highest I've seen it recently is like 8%. Now I think maybe down to like 2 or 3%.
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy. That's whatever, 6-7 years running at this point. We still see this arbitrage. Turns out financial services and traditional system is very inefficient. Well, let's talk about that. Let's actually talk about Antler for a little bit. Can you frame this a little bit? Because I know talking to you and obviously being in Korea where I met you in the first place,
yeah,
Antler's kind of a big deal. So like how big is Antler? Like how many geographies are you in? How many portfolio companies are going through it? All that stuff.
I think we've gotten big recently. It started in Singapore. The founders are European though. So most of the founders are from Rocket Internet. If you don't know Rocket Internet, it's a European based firm that's a company builder basically. And how they operate is the execs at Rocket Internet say, hey, this is the next best.
Is that a company builder or a company copier?
It's a company builder slash copier.
Oh, okay.
Right. So if Rocket Internet says, hey, I think like X business is going to be the next big thing in Southeast Asia, then they would go out and hire like MBA grads, or they would go out and hire like the best consultants from like McKinsey, or they would hire like X founders, give them a lot of money and say, hey, this is the business. This is the problem that you need to solve. Here's the money, go out and like solve it. But it's different from what Antler is doing now because how I understand it, Rocket Internet usually takes like 80% of the equity when they do something like this, but they hedge all the risks for the founders because they get a really fat salary doing this. Some equity, but not as much as like a founder that would be just hustling in their garage, for instance. The founders exited a couple of unicorns, and then they're in Singapore because they were sent to Singapore to build out like Zalora and Lazada, like big e-commerce companies in SEA. And they said, hey, like, again, I don't know the exact history, but I'm just trying to think what was going on in their minds. Like, all right, so Rocket Internet is able to bring a bunch of talented people together, give them a bunch of money and have them like build unicorns. But how can you like kind of, can you apply that to venture capital? And venture capital is really hard to break into. Again, like Antler is a really young firm. They've only started investing since 2018. Now we have a portfolio over 1,200, we're the number one.
You have a portfolio investor, of like, over 1,200 companies.
Yes, companies
in 6 years.
In 6 years across the globe. We're the number one investor in like the seed and angel stage, according to PitchBook. And that's more than plug and play. That's more than 500. That's more than YC and a lot. And, you know, it's hard to break into VC because if you're a good VC, you probably hustled for many years, like 10, 20, 30, 40 years to build up your reputation. And if you have that reputation, the best founders always come to you first, because they know that money's a commodity, but like the value that the VCs that have these good reputations is not. So as an early like VC, or as a VC that's just getting started, how do you compete with that? Well, the founders have to build up something. Like they need to build a team. They need to obviously have a product and a business, and they need to have some proof that it works, and there's actually demand in the market, and there's actually a chance that they're going to get big. So what are these founders doing before they're at a stage where they can go to like Y Combinator, before they can go to Sequoia, or before they can go to Elon Musk and say, hey, like I'm building the next best thing you can invest into. And I was talking about this in the other room, like, well, I mean, every big startup starts with the founder or founders deciding to quit their jobs and start building a business.
Right.
But if you think about it, like what do you do like on the first day? Like you quit your job yesterday. All right, now I'm a startup founder. You're at your desk. What am I supposed to be doing? And like
you make a super accurate business plan, right? The pro forma is going to be correct, I believe. That's the main goal.
Exactly.
Right?
And then that's all you have to do. And then you build it, and then you exit, and then you bro out. But again, like just kidding. Every business is different. Like depending on what business, what industry you're in, what market that you're in, like every founder's approach is different to when they're actually building something out. So it's really hard to say, hey, this is the right way to do it. So you just have to, here are the check marks that you have to like mark off. And if you mark off all these check marks, then you're going to one day become like a successful entrepreneur. It doesn't really work that way. You kind of have to fumble around, right? You have to decide who you're going to meet up with. Are you going to pitch your idea to probably like tens of hundreds of people? And then they're going to give you feedback and say that idea sucks. You're going to go back to your desk and say, man, all right, what am I going to do? Do I pivot a little? Do I pivot a lot? Do I scrape everything and start from the beginning? You go through this process, and we've looked at the data, and we've seen that founders usually take about a year and a half to 2 years before they're at like a level where they actually have something solid. They know what they're talking about. And when they're in front of institutional investors, the institutional investors will say, sounds risky, but you know, there might be a chance. So there's this founders go through this process of pitching their idea, you know, getting feedback from people saying that it sucks, going back to their desk, reiterating, and then, you know, just failing constantly until they're at a point where they're not at that point. So every founder goes through this. So what Antler wants to do is no one invests in that stage. The only people that do invest in that stage are angel investors. And the reason the angel investors invest into those types of founders is because they probably personally know that founder. Like you might not understand fully what they're trying to build, but you're willing to trust that person because you know he's a hustler, you know he's done really great things. And even if you don't necessarily understand what they're trying to build 100%, you will still put your trust in that person and maybe give them, I don't know, 50K, right? So that is angel investing. But how do you do that institutionally? How do you do that systematically? So Antler came up with an idea where, okay, let's bring in like the most talented people like in-house, like into like a physical room. And in Korea, we look at like 1,500 applications each cohort. So that's 3,000 applications a year. And we will select about 160 of them from the 3,000 applications. So get the most talented people together in a room, and then tell them, hey, I don't know who you are, but based on our interview, I think you're pretty smart. And I think you might be able to come up with a good business, come up and like bring people together to form a good team. But I haven't seen it yet. So I want to see that happen. And you have 10 weeks to do it. And like one of the criteria to get into our programs is you have to have quit your job, right? So you're all in on this. And the program runs, again, 24/7. My office is located right next to where the founder's shared office space is. So if I go into the office in the morning, I say hi to the founders. And we tell them, yeah, all right, you have 10 weeks. Here's a bunch of smart people that we've handpicked. We've interviewed all of you. And pitch me an idea in 10 weeks that is worth investment, right? Mm. How do you do that? So every week, basically it's a process of just like giving them really harsh feedback and just telling them that their idea sucks. Every week we do like, you know, a hackathon, right? So every week they basically do two hackathons, and they're free to like hook up with different people to form different teams for each hackathon. Or you can choose to do like different hackathons together with the same team. But if you're doing two hackathons a week, then that's 8 in a month. And that's like 16 hackathons over the course of 2 months. And again, what we do is like we continuously critique them. We tell them why something won't work. We tell them where the blind spots might be. And we just continue to poke holes in their ideas until like they're actually like, yeah, I mean, they know what they're doing. And we've seen that it usually takes about 6 or 7 weeks until they get to the point where they're actually able to like defend against all of the holes that we're trying to poke into whatever idea that they're building. And then they go out, meet the customers. And then by week 10, they come back and saying, hey, I have 5 customers and I made like $5,000 in the past like 2 weeks. And that's when we decide whether or not we want to invest into them or not. So the investment decision is based on not only based on what idea that they're pitching, and maybe they have some traction, but it also we also look at the process, right? So when we look at how they were when they first came into the cohort, who they hooked up with, what kind of ideas they pitched, what kind of ideas they scrapped. If they got into a fight with someone, how did they like deal with that? If they had a really hard problem they weren't able to crack, what was the process of approaching that really hard problem and how they solved that? So we look at all of that. And I think 50% of our investment decisions kind of factor off of that type of qualitative data. Mm. So we're making our investments on trusting the person, even though we haven't been friends for like a long time, but we try to create that type of confidence.
I love it.
This program.
That is fascinating. I'm going to say it as glibly, but I almost mean it as a compliment. It's almost a boiler room, right? For startups, right? Yes. Put them in the super high pressure. You've got to deliver very, very, very quickly. The people who do I mean, you're not going to have 100% success rate, but even a 10% success rate of the people coming out of it is going to make Mantler overall very successful. And those individual founders very successful. And going through that type of environment, when there's that much pressure, you get to know each other very, very, very well. So I've got to imagine, I mean, you're 6 years old, right? But I've got to imagine already the value of that network, the Antler network, the founders have gone through it and have that shared experience is absolutely enormous.
Yeah. There's no time to waste. There's no time for bullshit.
Yeah.
Because again, like if there are no good teams in a cohort, we will not invest into any one of them. So the whole thing is to like trying to see if we can create some really good deals that we can invest into.
Yeah.
If at IC, we see that, I mean, I think each cohort has about 30 teams pitched to us. If they all suck, then it means that we didn't do a good job of actually like pushing them to the limits to actually build something good. And we have to go back to the drawing board and see if we can do better the next cohort.
Totally.
But again, the investment isn't guaranteed, but the founders coming in have put in a fair amount of risk coming in because they quit their job, no income, but they're here.
That's
they have to make something happen.
All right. I have like a gazillion questions, but we wasted that time on kimchi trade. So my bad. We're going to do tap rooms. We're going to drop you into it. Here is a little slide that tells you how it typically goes. Couple housekeeping things, networking, not pitching. Don't be an asshole. Sure. Participant list, we don't do one. So if you find somebody you want to connect with, do it right there in the chat room. Or join our Telegram group, which our dear friend Isla has already linked in the chat. typically in the tap rooms themselves, you'll just kind of do a quick whip around to introduce yourselves for 30 seconds. And then, should you so choose, talk about the topic, which Isla is going to give you now.
Yeah. And the topic this time around is, what are some of the qualities you all look for in interesting startups or ventures that you're keen to get into? What's your decision criteria? I'll pop you into rooms now, and we'll see you back here in just about 10 minutes.
Welcome back, everyone. I did a crap job of time management. So, Gio, we're going to ask you the standard question, but shoot for brevity. Tell us the future. What are you excited by? And as always, it doesn't necessarily have to have anything to do with Antler or crypto, just whatever's on your mind.
The future. So if you're talking about like the far future, one of the things that Antler is like betting on is like people, there's going to be a lot more people just deciding to start their own businesses. And I don't think anyone decides to go into a job and plan to be at that job, one job until they retire. They move, I mean, go through multiple jobs. Sure. And like at one point, I mean, I think everyone will be at a point where, hey, maybe I can like start my own business. But the technology, the speed at which technology is advancing allows founders to build these types of businesses for very little money and time. Mm. So if I just give you like a really easy example, back in the early 2000s, I was building like a web service, SaaS. Basically, I was building Google Forms before Google Forms. It was a web-based platform. And the first thing that I needed to do is I needed a server. Mm. So what I did is I had to actually go out, because this was before Amazon AWS. I had to go out and actually buy like a physical like Blade server. I would haul that onto my car. I'd drive to like one of the public, the data centers, the many in Korea. I would sign a contract lease for one unit Blade server, lease for a year, install the server, and then I can actually start like coding and building something and putting stuff up on the web. That probably cost like $2,000 or $3,000, a lot of time. But now I just need to put my credit card on AWS and pay $5 a month. Mm-hmm. And then I can just start building whatever, right? And again, with Gen AI, like you don't even necessarily have to know how to code all that much anymore, right? So you just like copy paste the shit, and you don't have to be like a really talented coder and like understand the really deep nitty gritty stuff to get some sort of like very crude prototype or MVP out into the market and test your business idea. And I think this is just going to get more easier and more cheaper to start a business. And there's going to be more people starting businesses because the risk of failure is just so low, but the potential upside is really high. Right.
So it's totally asymmetric. And your point about AWS is so on, like people right. who are in the business, like they don't understand how big of a deal AWS is and there's more and more things like this.
Exactly.
And to another kind of complementary trend in your favor is kids are more technical. kids have iPads. It's like they're 4 or 5.
So since we're on crypto in blockchain, like maybe it's a little bit further out because there's a lot of like regulatory issues that need to be worked out. If you wanted to build like a financial product, you needed to work in Wall Street and you needed to build up cred for several years before you were at a position to even like suggest maybe we should build this type of financial product, right? So very high entry barrier. Mm. But in crypto, like even if you're like a kid in high school that understands how it works, you can like program your own like financial products and put it up for anyone to use. And I think that is also like a part of what I was just saying. It's just going to be more easier to build stuff that brings value to the people. And again, traditionally there was like a high barrier to entry, but like the advancements of technology is just going to get rid of all those barriers. And I think eventually that will happen in the financial space. I don't know how that what that would look like yet, though. So yeah, that's just kind of my take.
It's coming. It's coming. Those institutions are going to get disrupted. It might just take a bit. Isla, do you have another topic for everybody for 6-ish minutes? Talk faster.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. I'm shuffling. You should be all into different rooms now. And oh no, that didn't work. Let me do it again. And the topic du jour is, who would you ask for investment if you were going to do one of these little accelerator things today? Is that kind of the big boys, the incumbents, feed them? Or would you go and kind of crowdsource some money to create the next round of startups? How would you approach getting funding with this type of model in the future? If I'll pop you in here.
Welcome. We're doing a wrap up quickly again. So Jiho, plug your pluggables. Where do you want people to go now that they have seen our favorite wine swilling speaker?
Sorry, what was the question? Where do you have
Twitter, the Facebook? Where do you want people to go to look you up?
Oh, sorry. Hang on. Here is LinkedIn. Pretty active.
Yo, Kang, K-A-N-G is the name. J-A-I-J-I-H-O.
H-O, but I will give you the address on. And if you want to connect with me, it'll ask for an email. So I'll give you my work email to you too.
All right. And just because for the people that are listening to the podcast, his LinkedIn username is I Break Shit, which is awesome. And jihokang at antler.co. So check that out. A couple of quick wrap up items on our end. Like I said, weekly event, 10 a.m. Central. Next week, we're going to be talking about the tokenization of treasuries, which is actually super important if you actually want a functioning on-chain financial services industry. Sounds boring, really not. Diffuse Tap in person, June 3rd. Come check it and us out. Well, not me, but other people in the community out. Telegram group, join it, introduce yourself, say hello, tell everybody what you're up to. Thank you, Jiho, so much for sharing some of your wisdom here. I absolutely find the Antler business model fascinating. And it's cool to see how just ridiculously fast you guys have grown. Thank you, everybody, for joining. And 2 minutes late. We usually try to do it within a minute of the top of the hour, but close enough. Give us a break. All right. Thank you, everybody. See you in just shy of a week.
Bye now. Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you.
That's all, folks. Hope you learned something new. If you join us on Zoom every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central, you can also network with other fascinating alternative investors from all over the world in small groups of 4 or 5. Learn more on our website at www.diffusefunds.com. Until next time.